You've been cut off or refused welfare.
Used car salesmen and golf pros who run Ontario have decided your disability is no longer disabling.
Perhaps you're being forced
factors.
To work 140 hours a month to get your $500 welfare.
You or your
check.
Entire neighborhood have been brutalized by
you're
the
being
police.
Being removed from Canada and sent to a country where you'll be killed or thrown
you're
in jail.
You're being ticketed
and
often for not having a fixed address.
The shelter you stay in has no interest at all in human
you're
rights.
You're facing a government tribunal hearing without
the owner of the building
wants you out so it can take advantage of anti-tenant legislation.
You're being treated unjustly due to your economic position or skin color, and you're sick and tired of the corporate agenda and feel it's time to stand up and fight back. So what are you going to do? So who are you going to call? Well, if you're wise, you'll call OCAP, the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. If you want our help, just call. If you want to join, give us a call to set up an introductory meeting, 925-6939 in the east, 530-1550 in the west.
Hello, folks, and welcome to another edition of OCAP Radio on a Friday night here in Toronto. Of course, there's all as always, there's lots and lots and lots of stuff going on. We're going to bring it all to you, and right off the bat, we're going to go to Mr. Don Waitz with another episode, your monthly fix of shrink wrap. So, Don, take it away.
Oh, fix. Okay. Hello, everybody, and proud anti-psychiatry host Don Waitz coming to you strong on CKLN, word of mouth once again. And today we are going to hear a very dynamite speech, not the whole speech, but an edited part of a speech on electroshock, the first public lecture free that was done at OISE on March 3rd with Dr. Bonnie Burstow, who's a lecturer at Ontario Institute for Studies in Education in the Department of Counseling and Adult Education, and she is great, and she's the only health professional I know of, friends, that has taken a strong stand against not only the psychiatric, not only against electroshock, which targets women and the elderly a hell of a lot, as you may have heard me say on this radio, but against the whole system, an abolitionist perspective. So this is and Bernie's here to play part of that tape. So we'll do this in two parts. We can't play the whole thing now. So you'll hear about maybe up to 12 minutes. Yes, we're cutting it fine tonight. 12 minutes of Dr. Bonnie Burstow, who is also a very outstanding feminist and psychotherapist and anti-psychiatry activist, talking about, quote, electroshock as a feminist issue. Okay, Bernie.
To CKLN.
So my topic today is, as clear as electroshock. And whenever I tell people that I'm talking about electroshock, whether I told people this in the 70s or in the 80s or in the 90s or today, I've almost always gotten from some people the exact same response. How come wasn't that discontinued years ago? Well, electroshock was not discontinued years ago. And no, it didn't almost disappear. There's approximately the same amount of shock given today that there was in 84 when the Ontario Coalition to Stop Electroshock was in its heyday. And there promises to be more because there is a huge push right now by shock doctors. But what you can hear is that shock doctors are lamenting the tragedy of insufficient shock being used. And so it's a very important thing for us to be on top of. So let me start by saying a little bit about shock. It's a fascist invention, and when I say that, I'm not talking metaphorically. Shock began in fascist Italy. It was invented in 1938 by a man called Cerletti, and Cerletti visited a slaughterhouse and saw pigs being pacified by the application of electrical prods to their heads, and he decided to try it on a human being. A patient, a homeless man, actually, was brought to the hospital against his will. And against his will, he was then used as a guinea pig. Cerletti, in the meantime, had invented a crude shock machine. And this man who had never came there or didn't want to be there was strapped down and electrodes were attached to his head and he was given electroshock. After the first few shocks, he screamed, "Not another one, it's deadly." That was the beginning of this highly touted treatment. By 1940, it had already been introduced into the States, and by the early 40s, it had become a standard part of the psychiatric regimen. Shock today is not that much different than shock was in the 40s and 50s. The only major advance is the giving of muscle relaxants so the back wouldn't break. In the 80s, I was part of an organization that held 3 days of public hearings in which people who got shock came to testify. And the recurrent themes identified by the shock survivors were damage, terror, lack of safety, horrific memory loss. Many testified that they would prefer death to ever being subjected to this procedure again. All but two people who testified called for the complete abolition of electroshock. I want to begin by introducing you to a definition, and I'm quoting here from a neurologist, a man called Sidney Samant. Samant says, and I quote, "As a neurologist and an electroencephalographer, I have seen many patients after ECT. ECT produces effects identical to those of head injury. Electroconvulsive therapy, in effect, may be defined as a controlled form of brain damage produced by electrical means. In electroshock, a person is given an anesthetic and a muscle relaxant, also oxygen because they stop breathing. Then the person's head is attached to a shock machine by virtue of two electrodes. The machine is turned on, and then 100 and 100 to 150 volts of electricity is passed through the brain. Generally, a course is 6 to 8 treatments. The amount must be sufficient to create a grand mal seizure, a convulsion, hence the name electroconvulsive therapy. Significantly, in real medicine, doctors try to stop others from having grand mal seizures, as they know this means brain damage, not with shock doctors. They try to produce it, and they do produce it. It creates lesions in the brain. The brain bleeds. Cells disappear. Ghost cells appear. Nowadays, psychiatrists are into denying that shock causes brain damage because they are confronted with a populace who, for some reason, is not so keen on brain damage. But they didn't bother denying it in the early days because there weren't any objections. And so it's very important to go to these early people because they actually were honest about what it did. The early shock doctors made it very clear that it is precisely the brain damage or intellectual impairment that makes this treatment, quote, therapeutic, unquote. Let me quote here from the second biggest name in the saga of electroshock, psychiatrist and electroshock mentor Dr. Abraham Myerson. Myerson said, and I quote, "These people have more intelligence than they can handle, and the reduction of intelligence is an important factor in the curative process," unquote. Along with brain damage comes enormous memory loss. And it's not surprising there's memory loss. You put holes in people's head, it stands to reason that there's going to be memory loss. You rampantly destroy brain cells, and of course you're going to wipe out memory attached to those cells. Now, we know about memory loss from studies. There's umpteen studies that prove it. We know it from patient reports. Studies show that up to 90% of patients on ECT complain of ongoing memory loss. Of course, there are doctors who discount this evidence. In fact, many, many doctors, saying that the patients are imagining it and that these complaints are simply proof of ongoing neurosis. Significantly, an ECT review committee set up by the government in Ontario in the 80s to look into the shock clearly concluded memory loss. Let me quote here. "ECT causes memory loss varying from minor and transient to severe and long-term." Actually, there's two kinds of memory loss created. There's retrograde amnesia, and that's loss of memory of things that happened prior to shock, and antegrade amnesia, that's inability to remember stuff that happens after shock. The ability to remember new things is impeded. I can't overstate what a serious impediment to a decent life this destruction of memory is, this menticide is. We need memory to navigate the world. You cannot even go into a grocery store and shop if you cannot rely on memory. As human beings, we can't make decisions without memory. When we make decisions, we not only project ourselves toward the future, we project ourselves back into the past so we can make effective selections of behavior that has served us in the past. We can't do that if we can't remember what we did in the past. We don't know what we like, what we are attached to, who we are. Memory is the foundation of our identity, and you interfere with memory and you profoundly interfere with the integral whole that is the human being. And significantly, that interference can be very, very major indeed. I want to say, as a therapist specializing in this, is I've seen people with 5 to 20 years wiped out. Some shock survivors have had all of their memory before shock wiped out. Illustrative of this in this regard is Linda McDonald. At 23, she was a young married woman with children. She was depressed from the duties that fall to young mothers. She was given electroshock, and she never again remembered any of her children, her husband, anyone. Even when memory loss is not that extensive, it still has profoundly interferes with people. I'd like to briefly quote from testimony with a shock survivor and a fellow activist Shirley Johnson gave to a meeting of the Toronto Board of Health. She said, and I quote, "The memory loss is especially painful since I could not remember a lot of times when the children were growing up, the two younger girls more so, since the shocks were closer to their birth. The two older children, I do not remember their graduation. Many times my family and friends would bring up happenings that I had to question them about to test whether the memory would return. I feel so alien because of this damage. I used to cover up a lot of times, thinking if I listened more and rested a lot before going out, it would be easier. Finally, when the anxiety got so bad, I would completely avoid people, and especially social gatherings where I was supposed to know people and remember their names," unquote. I want you to imagine the devastation for women whose primary identities are mothers that cannot remember their various things that happened to their children. I also want to add, while we're on Shirley, that one of the last times Shirley was electroshocked in another ward in the same hospital, her son was being electroshocked. And her son was a musician, and it deprived him of his ability to remember music because you don't know what's going to go. And he killed himself. And so look at the devastation of shock on this family.
And that was part of a dynamite speech on electroshock as a feminist issue by Dr. Bonnie Burstow at OISE on March 3rd. And we'll be, and by the way, friends, unfortunately, electroshock is escalating. Its main targets are women and the elderly, which is a form of social control, which the capitalist system, as we well know, is really into. Socially controlling people, it has nothing to do with healing. Okay, we're taking a break. We'll be right back with the OCAP show, with OCAP Radio, right, with Mike and Bernie.
April 3rd, come out to Reviver, the mayoral special. As part of this night of film discussion and music, Toronto mayoral candidates Miller, Jacobek, and Tory will each have 5 minutes to impress and engage the crowd. It all happens at Revival, 783 College Street. Doors open at 8 p.m. Tickets are $5 in advance or $7 at the door, with a student discount available. To reserve tickets or for more information, email Sanjeev at antiapathy.org. That's S-A-N-J-I-V at antiapathy.org. Reviver is organized by Anti-Apathy, innovating for social and environmental awareness and action, supported by CKLN.
Racism,
surveillance,
detention,
deportation.
Will they make us more secure? This April, Ontario's Tory government hosts a Great Lakes Security Summit.
The goal is to maintain the free flow of goods while restricting and monitoring the movement of people, especially non-white asylum seekers already targeted in the United States.
On Sunday, April 6th, come out to an educational forum on the rights of asylum seekers and non-status people in Canada and the U.S.
Workshops and speakers will include Open the Borders, the Committee of Non-Status Algerians, and Drum.
Translation in Farsi, Arabic, and Portuguese will be available, as will food.
There will also be a screening of Holiday Camp, documenting resistance to refugee detention camps in Australia.
It'll all take place on Sunday, April 6th, from noon till 6 at OISE, 252 Bloor West at St. George Subway Station. For more info, call 416-925-6939.
Presented by Toronto's No One Is Illegal Committee.
And what an intro, exploding into OCAP Radio here on another evening. We're going to jump right into it. With that PSA has given us a nice introduction to the main thing I want to talk about tonight, or one of the main announcements to give, and that is about the Great Lakes Security Summit, which is coming up from April 7th to 9th. The PSA told you a lot of what you need to know. On April 6th, there's going to be a really, really, really solid conference. people are coming into town from Vermont and Montreal, Windsor, and New York City. A group named Desi's Rising Up and Moving, as well as the Coalition for the Human Rights of Immigrants, will be coming into town to do workshops. It's all getting underway at noon at OISE, at the Ontario Institute for Studies and Education. I hope that everyone will come out. There's going to be workshops on immigrant law. There's going to be workshops given by actual refugee claimants, immigrants who have gone through the system and who have fought the system successfully. There's going to be a panel discussion. It's going to be really smashing. And after it all, we're going to launch a video on events taking place in Australia last summer around the Woomera detention camp, which is where immigrants are warehoused in Australia. And after that, we're going to go to a demo on that Sunday night. Sunday, April 6th at 7 p.m., we will be holding a picket to hopefully, if we are lucky, give indigestion to those who are checking in to the Sutton Place Hotel at Bay and Wellesley as they settle in for a night of schmoozing before their big conference. And as that conference gets underway on Monday, April 7th, early in the morning, we will be meeting for a demonstration at the corner, once again, of Bay and Wellesley in front of the Sutton Place Hotel, where they will be encamped for 3 days, planning how to tighten border security, planning how they can better regulate the flow of immigrants and refugees onto the continent and between the so-called nation states of the continent. Just a disgusting conference, and we're glad that we are having the public education event as well as the demonstration that Monday morning, 10 a.m., April 7th at Bay and Wellesley. And on that note, next week will be the week before that show, before that event. And on the OCAP radio show, we're going to hopefully have a panel discussion with some of the people that will be speaking at the conference. To let you know who's speaking, we're talking about Avi Go from Status Coalition, Nandita Sharma from Open the Borders in Vancouver, Desi's Rising Up and Moving, Max Scott, formerly of OCAP, now of Coalition for the Human Rights of Immigrants in New York City.
Max back.
And as well as many others. So stay tuned to next week's show. It's going to be smashing. And so is the event, and so is the demo. I also want to let you know about a case that's going on, something you can do. In the meantime, OCAP for many, many months has been working with a woman by the name of Dolores Murray. Dolores is currently in Canada. She came to Canada from Jamaica. Since she's arrived, she's been very productive, a productive citizen, producing 3 Canadian babies. And those 3 little babies are not so baby anymore, but the 3 kids are named Joshua, Matthew, and Daniel. They are 3 Canadian citizens. Dolores is currently going through the process of having her humanitarian and compassionate claim heard. That claim, if it is rejected, would result in the 3 kids staying in foster care here in Canada while Dolores would be removed from the country. Of course, that is how it would be supposed to go. OCAP might have something to say in that, but it would be nice if that claim was just simply accepted. And what we're calling for right now is for people to write some letters of support. We're going to take them down to Immigration Canada and present them en masse. So what we're asking for is letters dealing with the case of Dolores Murray. You have to write the full name and get your pens out. You should address the letters to Immigration Canada, Officer P. Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, Officer P. Cohen, at Immigration Canada on the case of Dolores Murray. Write some letters, folks, and fax them to OCAP at 416-925-9681, and hopefully Dolores will have her claim accepted, and that'll be that. And just to give you an idea of another casework victory this week, OCAP, again, another long-standing case is the one of Tamika Reed. It's been absolutely brutal. We've had a lot of trouble dealing with the case because it's been going down in Brampton, and we've been trying to negotiate our way through the Peel regional system of governance. We went out to Peel this week. We were about 10 strong, 10-15 strong, including people from OCAP, including people from the Black Action Defense Committee, from Rights Watch, from Suburban Resistance, and from the Brampton Action Network or something like that. In any case, we went out to Peel Housing and we spoke to the board of directors of Peel Living, which is what they call their version of Metro Toronto Housing. And we presented Tamika's case. We presented a clear demand that Tamika be replaced into subsidized housing after being evicted on very, very little, with very, very little reason a few months ago. And with almost no delay, they have agreed to reopen Tamika's case. So we're still waiting for an absolutely 100% positive result in that. But it really, I have to say, it really looks good. They're going to reevaluate the case. And hopefully, Tamika will be put back into subsidized housing, because they've been out in Brampton. The market value for rents, Tamika has two kids. It's unbelievable. It's really, really hard to live. So hopefully we're going to get a positive result within the next month or so for Tamika, and already a big, big, big step forward. I just want to let everyone know we've been sort of skipping over the trial. We haven't been giving a lot of information, but I just want to put it on everyone's radar once again that John Clark, Gaetan Aru, and Stefan Pilipar are still standing trial on charges relating to their supposed leadership of the event at June 15th. There's been... the Crown's case has proceeded along at a fairly rapid clip. The jury has been inundated with video footage of June 15th and cop after cop after cop taking the stand. We had Detective Mesner on the stand yesterday and today, and he was one of the lead investigators in the investigation into the June 15th events. And his testimony was pretty ridiculous, actually. I think he was quite emotional about the supposed barrage that his officers were under, but didn't have too much to say when he put forward a certain version of events, only to have that version of events contradicted by the tapes. There's really way too much that happens in a day, let alone a week, let alone the past 3 weeks in court, to summarize on the radio show. But I encourage everyone to go down to 361 University, courtroom 28, and the Crown's case is going to be wrapping up within the next 2 or 3 days, and then it'll be time for the defense, and it's going to be really, really time for people to come out and show their support, because it's not going to be professional testifiers from the Toronto Police Service up on the stand. It's going to be our own. It's going to be our own folks off the street who were at June 15th are going to talk about why they went to June 15th. We're going to have folks who were involved in the organizing talk about the circumstances that that organizing came out of, what the organizing was, and the shock that resulted from the police response on that day. There's going to be lots of OCAP folks, lots of community organizers, and lots of community members that are going to be up on the stand. And Don White has reminded me quite correctly that people should be going down to the courthouse for 10 a.m. every morning, which is the time that it gets underway. And we'll continue to bring updates as possible. Also, if people just really have too much time on their hands and can't get enough courtroom hanging out, the trial, apparently the legal system has too much time on its hands. They're just dragging things out unbelievably. We've been talking about Tucker's trial. We thought that we could summarize what happened to Tucker's trial. Tucker's on trial for theft relating to the leaked standardized tests that happened in the fall of 2001. Really, there's been, in 2 days of a trial, there's been very little that has actually happened. And there's going to be two more days of trial. The trial was supposed to be over as of this afternoon, but they're not even anywhere close. And what's actually happening is that it will be on Monday and Tuesday as well, and that's at Old City Hall Courthouse, and that is also getting underway at 10 a.m.
I think it's in Courtroom A. She was there today.
Courtroom A. No, I didn't know what courtroom it is. Courtroom A on Monday and Tuesday. Right, the lettered courthouse or courtrooms are on the third floor, so Courtroom A, 10 a.m. on Monday and Tuesday. And OCAP is also looking for some money. As usual, we are in desperate need of funds, and we are hosting a big event that everyone should come out and support on Saturday, April 4th. It's going to be all day at the Transact Club. It's going to be a rummage sale. OCAP's cleaning out its closets, cleaning out our back room, and we're going to have all sorts of wares, from clothes donated by Don White's to various goods, lots of quality merchandise, folks. So come on down. Saturday, April 4th for the Transact Club OCAP Rummage Sale. And if you have rummage to donate, call the OCAP office at 416-925-6939 or just bring it down to the Transact Club. But we can arrange pickup if it's necessary. Also, just as a final note, a bit of uplifting news, folks. OCAP, in the past 2 weeks, has launched into Parkdale. As any listeners who live in the Parkdale area well know, all up and down Jameson, all up and down Tyndall and Dunn and Spencer, along Queen Street, and especially at the end of West Lodge, conditions in the Parkdale area are disgusting and shameful. Landlords are quite often content to cash rent checks without upholding any other part of the agreement, i.e. keeping apartments in livable condition. In the past 2 weeks, we've been paying lots of visits to folks down in Parkdale, and we can report that we've taken on about 15 cases in the last 2 weeks of disrepair in the Parkdale area. Places everything ranging from simple leaks and whatnot to absolutely devastated apartments where large renovations needed to happen. Those 15 cases, we were expecting a fight. We were gearing up to go to battle, especially around apartments at West Lodge, which is a notorious place run by the Wynn brothers, where conditions are just absolutely brutal. And out of those 15 cases, barring two that we were only began to deal with today, so out of the 13 cases that we've dealt with before today, we have 100% success ratio in getting things fixed up in Parkdale. So Parkdale tenants, don't forget, if you are living in bad conditions, if your landlord is not taking care of business, if your landlord's just cashing the checks and not doing much else, give OCAP a call at 416-925-6939 and we will take a look and take on your landlord for you. And once again, there's no guarantees, of course, but we are currently batting 1,000 as far as that goes.
Can't do better than that.
And I see we have just a couple minutes left, so I'm just going to let everyone know about a very important meeting that's going to be coming up in late April. April 26th is a big day to circle on your calendar, particularly if you live in the east end of downtown. In the next few weeks, I would imagine we'll have Gaetan back on the show to talk more about this, but the stuff going on in the East End is just getting more and more brutal. You know, you don't have to look too far away to see a city that's under attack. You know, in the East End, services, we hear about new cuts coming to services every day, and on April 26th, the East End community is going to unite to begin to fight back against those cuts. QP, OCAP, and the Toronto Disaster Relief Committee will be hosting a public East End Neighborhood Defense Committee or a Neighborhood Defense meeting. It's going to be taking place at the Central Neighborhood House at 349 Ontario. It's going to kick off at noon with a barbecue, and then we're going to move inside. There's going to be speakers, including Gaetan Heroux of OCAP Radio fame, and many other frontline staff from the East End, many other residents, longtime residents of Regent Park, longtime residents and longtime users of the city's shelter and hostel system, as well as the drop-ins. And we're going to talk about some of these things that have been going on April 26th, 12 noon, 349 Ontario. Circle it on your calendar, folks.
And one last announcement. Do check out your local Now magazine. There's an article in there about what went down at the Police Services Board that happened last week. And no surprise, some of the most vehement fascists on City Council find themselves on that board and did approve Julian Fantino's new attempt to bully Queen's Park, or sorry, Ottawa, into passing laws that would make basically protesting illegal in Toronto, and would bring up extra charges for people who did things the police considered bad during protests, and would give police basically total control over who got to protest and when and where. So look for that coming to City Council. You could contact Olivia Chow. I know that she's working hard to see that that this thing dies a quick death, but do keep your ears peeled for that one.
My letter against your favorite police chief, Fantino, the fascist, will be aired tomorrow, possibly. on by Norman Otis Richmond on Saturday Morning Live. I hope you will read it, Norman. See ya, Don.
All right, so that's it for Radio Cap this week. Stay tuned. Sex to Soul is coming up right after this.
There is suffering in the streets.